I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Scott and Allison Stratton are co-hosts of the UN podcast. They have just written their fifth book together, Unbranding, 100 Branding Lessons for the Age of Disruption. It's a book that provides insight into this transitional time in the digital age, the age of disruption. We live in a time where marketing is everywhere. It's easy and ubiquitous, and it's also difficult to figure out what's useful and what ultimately is good. This book is also about what new strategies companies can utilize to improve their reputation in the online world, how it can improve customer relations and in turn improve their products and services and inevitably their bottom line. Visit unmarketing.com for more. This new book is published by Wiley. Please welcome to the Plante Online program, Allison Stratton. Ms. Stratton, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Do you and Scott, do you still use Blackberries?
No, we don't. No, we don't. We gave up our Blackberries. Oh, now it's been a while now. I would say 6 years probably now.
Yeah.
But we were, I think, the last, you know, we always joke that we were the last people standing with our Blackberries. So, no, we have iPhones now.
Yeah, see, I still use a Blackberry, and I enjoy it
a great deal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the same reason that you guys used it for years was because of the keyboard. And I still, I mean, I have a, you know, a tablet that I use for, you know, for the internet and stuff, and I can't cope with using a screen. Did you find that hard?
It was a bit of an adjustment. I think for us it was just, you know, we talk about tech so much, and we weren't able to try out all the apps we were using, and we found it a bit frustrating with syncing music and things like that.
Yeah.
So we just kind of, we made the switch. It definitely took some adjustment, but
yeah.
Now we're pretty used to it, but...
Yeah, that's what
I love my BlackBerry, so.
Yeah, I'm afraid of that because I guess they're not. Well, I don't know if they're not making them anymore or the last time I checked, the BlackBerries came out with one that was just a screen.
Yeah.
And so
have a bigger screen, probably, right?
Yeah. So when this phone dies, I'm gonna have to get a new phone and make the adjustment.
Well, it didn't take us too long to get used to it.
All right. Well,
so.
that's good to know. Yeah. How did you and Scott meet?
We actually met on Twitter. So I was running my company, which was called Mummies. It was a maternity lingerie company, and I was living a town over, and Scott had started on marketing. He hadn't put out a book yet. He had made his big kind of push on Twitter, and he was speaking and doing consulting, and we met actually because we both had children, and we were kind of tweeting just about parenting. And I had put something up about my kids having a lemonade stand, and he replied. And, we had both worked for a parenting website called Yummy Mummy that's out of Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And we both done some writing for them and had some friends in common. And so, yeah, that's how we met, and we were friends, and we started working together at the same coffee shop on individual projects, not working together on the same thing at the time. And then, over the years, we started working together, writing together. I stopped doing my own business and joined Scott in his. And the rest is sort of history.
So how many years has it been?
So Unmarketing came out was in 2008. So that's 9 years?
Uh-huh.
So I would say, 9, 10 years that we've known each other and been working together. And now we're married. So,
uh-huh.
You know, kind of a yada, 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 and now we're married story. But we actually, we met on Twitter.
Yeah, so, let's say it's 9 years, almost 10 years. Technology's changed a great deal. And
yeah.
So you guys have seen, you've been at the fore of this and seeing how technology affects marketing and how we're marketed to by companies.
Absolutely.
Yeah, is it a lot more frightening now than, say, 10 years ago?
Well, I just think it's so fast, you know, like there's new platforms, new technologies constantly coming about. And that's what we wrote about in our new book on branding. But
mm-hmm.
How does a company survive all of this sort of fast paced change? Because it's a bit dizzying, like it's especially for entrepreneurs and smaller businesses. There's so many choices and you're constantly having to decide, you know, should I adopt a new platform? Should I use virtual reality? Should I do this and that? And so I think it's hard for businesses to decide where to focus their energy, and I think it's hard for customers to know, you know, just we have so much information now. which is it has good parts to it, yeah. and also has the negative side to it.
Yeah, and the thing that I've always wondered, because we've been told this forever, that all publicity is good publicity. I'm wondering if you found, in the experience that you've had in terms of watching brands, watching companies over the years, does bad publicity ever kill a brand?
I don't know. I think it's very complicated. We definitely are not in the all publicity is good publicity school. Uh-huh. Like, we definitely think that, you know, there is bad publicity. And I think that we actually see it as a good thing. I want to know, as a consumer, you know, where my money is going.
Right.
I want to know how a company that I'm giving money to treats their employees. I want to know how they treat their customers. I want to know what their views are and where they put their attention and their energy. So I think it's great that we have access to all this information that we didn't used to have, mm-hmm. because I think that as consumers, you know, we really vote with our dollars. And so I like the idea of supporting companies that take care of their employees. I like that. So I think that that kind of publicity, the negative publicity, like, for example, Scott and I had very briefly, we just started using Shopify a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And then we found out about Shopify, you know, having Rebart stuff on their site, and so we stopped using them. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, Shopify may not go out of business because of that, because there'll always be people who, you know, don't feel as strongly about it as we do or aren't as privileged that, like, they can just leave.
Yeah.
Shopify. Some people rely on it for their business. But I think that still, if they lost some people, then that's bad. And I don't want to look at, like, what happened with United, for example, and all the stories with United,
yeah.
with, you know, but the most being probably that customer who was dragged off the plane. I don't want to see that story and think, you know, all publicity is good publicity. Because I know if I have a choice between United and another airline, I'm going to go with the other airline. So one of the things Scott and I talk about is that it's complicated. It's not as simple as saying, you know, company does a bad thing and they go out of business.
Yeah.
It's just everyone has their own values, and we're constantly sort of making decisions based on the information that we have that lead us in one direction or another. And I think it'll always be good business for companies to do good things and have good publicity,
yeah.
and good stories. So I hope not. I hope all publicity is not good publicity.
Yeah, you mentioned the United thing, and there is I guess a chapter at the end of the book where you talk about the troubles that United had gone through, not just the dragging down the aisle, but other issues that they'd experienced. And I mean, I remember back that week when the doctor was being dragged down the aisle, thinking, well, they're going to have to park their planes next week, right?
Yeah.
But they seem to survive that. And, I mean, I think of Kendall Jenner in the Pepsi ad that caused a lot of bother for some people. You know, you thought that was going to hurt that brand. But, I mean, people still drink Pepsi, right?
I think that what happens is that there's all different ways that we figure out how we're going to spend our money. So
right.
for airlines, for example, you know, Scott travels a lot. He does keynotes all over the world. So let's say he has two flights and they're both the same. It's both direct flights at the right time of day. He's going to choose the company that isn't United,
mm-hmm.
right? He usually will fly Air Canada if possible or WestJet if possible. He's not going to go with United. But if United has the only flight that gets him to his gig on time, he's going to fly United.
Right.
And that's the way all of our decisions are made. You know, there's always a set of priorities. And there's always all these different factors that come into place. And I was the same way about United. I thought, oh, for sure, no one's going to use it anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, people still need to get places. And in the grand scheme of things, we all make decisions based on whatever our needs are. If you need to fly home to your family and United is the only flight, you know, there's a good chance you're going to take that flight.
Yeah.
And so, but what it does do is it opens up this space for competition. Right? And we call that the experience gap. So the experience gap being the difference between your best experience with a brand and your worst experience with a brand. And it doesn't even need to be an experience that happened to you. It can be a story, right?
Yeah.
It's whatever you think of. And as that gap gets bigger and bigger, that's where competition can come in. That's where an airline like WestJet, who's incredible to their customers and incredible to their employees, can really steal customers away. And so I think that that's what you see with a lot of companies, is you see that is what opens up when these kinds of things happen. And I think also, to be fair, sometimes we live in a bit of a bubble with social media, and, like, not maybe everybody has heard the same stories about United as we have. I'm not sure how far all the stories spread. So, I think it's just very complicated.
Yeah. You mentioned a moment ago that we're seeking out information like never before. And so if we find out, say, the values of a certain company align with ours, regardless of cost, regardless of previous loyalties, we'll move our business to them. And
convergence has, become this huge thing, right? I think we're just growing up in a time where we have all this information. And I love it. I love that our kids are growing up in a time where they can decide to go with companies based on the values that those companies represent. And we are often willing to spend more money. We looked at something in the book, like we broke down loyalty factors, how companies built loyalty. And we looked at value and cost. And we looked at convergence as well. And people are more concerned about value than cost. Like, many of the most popular brands in their industries are not the cheapest brands. They tend to be the most expensive brands. But they offer this kind of perceived value where people feel that they can trust them, that if they spend the money, they know they're going to get what they paid for. And that's more important to people than the actual dollar sign amount. And when you combine that with convergence with values, people want to be associated with brands that are doing good things.
Yeah.
Because we hear about those things now, right? We're constantly hearing about the stories of what companies are doing and how they're treating people.
Yeah, it's a fascinating time we live in, and I guess that's what you mean by the age of disruption, because a lot of the things that, say, worked 20, 30 years ago don't necessarily work today.
It's just the speed of innovation, you know. Disruption's an old idea, just like, you know, the automobile disrupted transportation or the internet disrupting communication. Like, it's not a new idea. It's just that because we have so much information and because these technologies are developing so rapidly, there seems to be this kind of, like, accentuated feeling of, you know, change around us.
Yeah.
And new platforms coming about, and companies like Airbnb with technology that didn't exist 10 years ago now is an entire industry, right? So it's hard, I think. It can be a bit dizzying to decide where you should focus your attention as a business owner. And that's really what we wanted to talk about. And what we found by looking at, you know, so many brand stories over the years, and what we put into unbranding was really that the real protection, I guess, or the defense against all of this disruption is creating loyalty.
Yeah.
And really focusing on creating loyalty and having loyal customers and keeping that experience gap as small as possible so that customers will choose you. Because they have so many choices that you actually make it easier for them if they just know that's the pizza place we always order from. You know, like, we don't need to look at the 200 other pizza places, because we're happy with this one. And that really should be the goal of every business, to have a loyal customer.
And so when you see loyalty programs on the one hand now, and companies sort of screwing that up, you look at the Air Miles fiasco of a while back, some companies still don't get it.
Yeah, because that's not really what loyalty is about, right?
Because
that's really about money in some ways, right? You go a certain number of times and you're going to get a discount, or you go a certain number of times and you get in line faster, things like that. But real loyalty is about valuing that cost, like I said, providing value, so honoring the price, and then providing comfort, so focusing on meeting needs of your customers, whatever they may be, focusing on convenience. So just like a business is busy trying to decide what to do, as consumers, we're all busy. So convenience is incredibly important today. And then that convergence and those four factors kind of get put together into what real loyalty is, which is where a customer will pay more and all of these things, and they don't care about a stamp card, you know?
Yeah.
They care about trusting the business that they're working with. That's real loyalty.
Yeah.
And a stamp on a card is almost kind of an easy way out, right? Like, we want to earn loyal customers, we're going to stamp your card. Well, real loyal customers go because they trust the product. They trust that they exchange their money and they're going to get something or service or a product that they know will meet their needs and that they know will be reliable every time. And also, and this is also really important today, that they know that when something goes wrong, which it almost always does, mistakes happen in business all the time. It's unavoidable. But when a mistake happens, that company is going to make things right. And that's huge today, because we see all of these mistakes, you know, shared all over social media because people like to complain and rant kind of about when things go wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's a huge part of loyalty. And if I buy something from a store, let's say, and try to return it, and I'm treated disrespectfully or I'm not, that purchase isn't honored, I'm not going to care if I need one more stamp. Like, I'm not going to go back to get that fifth stamp or tenth stamp, you know?
Yeah. Well, what are you finding in terms of the consumer online? Do you find that they're savvy? Because there's something in the book that you guys talk about, you and Scott, how you guys hate marketing BS and sort of the fraud that we see from companies, you know, that send you emails saying that something's terribly urgent when it's not really at all, and it's just another opportunity for them to market at you. Did you find that people are able to get through that and see what's BS and what's not?
I think people are getting better at it. I think it's one of those things that, you know, everyone's always looking for a shortcut, right?
Yeah.
You need a shortcut. So some study tells you that people open, you know, more dramatic headlines, right? Dramatic headlines work. And so rather than providing a real sale or working hard to improve your product or doing good business and growing your stuff over time, we write these kind of insane headlines or, you know, whatever we can do, like a clickbait kind of a headline to lure people in. And then we realize, you know, there wasn't anything there. And that only works on people once or twice. Eventually people are like, I'm not clicking anymore. I'm not going to look at your sales anymore. It happens with frequency as well, right? You sign up for something because you want to find information about a product. And then all of a sudden you're bombarded with, you know, 5 emails a day promoting sales when that wasn't what you signed up for. So all of these tricks that companies use to kind of get around doing actual, you know, making good sales, doing good content for people, eventually they wear off and people are getting more savvy, and we're constantly looking for ways to block those ads, right? That's like the second layer of technology. The first technology is to trick people, and the second one is how do we block everybody so we don't have to see any ads at all? And that's unfortunate, I think, because I think that being able to reach out to your customers, especially customers that signed up, you know, like a customer that held up their hand and said, I want to find out more about you, and then you bombard them or you fake, you know, you give them all these fake headlines that just to be clickbait. I think that's the worst thing you can do because you had an interested customer. So I hope they're going to be more savvy. I know that, you know, we have kids that are teenagers and they've grown up shopping online. And, you know, I think that they're more savvy than we were who didn't grow up with it. And hopefully it'll continue.
Yeah. And I guess this gets into the idea of how a lot of people are and how they view their communication online, that there's this expectation that if we post something privately or send a message privately to a group even, that it'll remain private. I mean, I find that frustrating that the people expect that in this day and age. I mean, if I write anything online, I mean, even as private as it might be, even if I sent you an email, for example, I would expect that it would be seen by somebody else other than you.
Yeah, you have to be so careful. And I think that everyone needs to understand that whenever you are sitting at a computer or your phone and you're typing something, you're sharing something, an email, a message, a private message, a DM, a tweet, or whatever, even if you have all your privacy settings all done on Facebook and you're in a group, everything that you share online, you should consider as if you're sharing it in public.
Mm-hmm.
And the same rules should apply that would apply if you were going to go up to the person and say it to them. You know, Scott likes to say that you shouldn't put anything online that you wouldn't have on a billboard, like in a driving by in a car with your boss and your mom. And, you're in public. And I think sometimes we think we're sitting in, you know, we're in a room by ourselves with our laptop, but everything can be shared. We have a story in the book, one of the ones that I thought was one of the most fascinating, which was a private moms group. And they were complaining about a pediatrician's office, because it was a Facebook group for this town, and, you know, some of the moms and dads had bad experiences with this pediatrician, so they were kind of, you know, complaining about it to the other parents. And somebody in the group took a screenshot and sent it to the pediatrician and said, here are these people that are complaining about you on this parenting site. And the pediatrician's office said, you're not our clients anymore.
Right.
And they basically told them they couldn't come into the pediatrician anymore. And, you know, that's not the way I think a pediatrician should react, but it does show that if you're going to put something online, even if you think it's private, there could be consequences. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't share opinions online or that the parents did something wrong in saying, complaining,
right.
But there can be consequences. And the same consequences can happen if you're, you know, we worry about our kids, you know, applying to colleges and universities and to jobs. Like, everything is searchable. Everything can be a screenshot and shared. And so, yeah, just remember that you're in public and try and act accordingly.
Yeah.
So whatever you say, make sure you're ready to stand by it and be respectful and kind, hopefully, and remember that because it's everything can come back and it's all in public.
Yeah. Customer reviews online, do they matter? And how are they best handled by companies, especially companies that experience you know, a raft of negative complaints. You see this on Yelp, you see this on Facebook, and et cetera. Is there a best way to respond to say angry or negative complaints?
Well, first of all, I think they matter a lot.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to matter more and more because I think people trust reviews much more than they trust advertising. And so, especially with the connection to Facebook, so like when you can see that not only is this, let's say a restaurant, for example, reviewed highly on Yelp, but your friends reviewed it.
Yeah.
So these are people that you trust and you know to a certain extent, and they also like that restaurant. I think that is huge. I mean, it's not any different than when you used to sit around at school or at a dinner party or wherever you go and say, I went to this great restaurant, you guys should try it. It's the online version of that, and I think it's incredibly important. And we use them all the time, and many people do. In terms of the negative side of things, it's one of the biggest questions we get asked. You know, how do you handle negative reviews? And I think that there's a few things that you need to think about. I think you need to think about, first of all, what is the review? And I think you need to try very hard, although as an entrepreneur I understand, try very hard to be thankful that you're getting feedback. Because the real customers you need to worry about are not the angry, angry ones and the super happy ones. They're the ones who it's just fine. Because what's going to happen is that those are the ones who are going to leave and they're never going to complain. They're never going to tell you. Most people are passive. Most people, I know I am in person, I don't like to complain at a restaurant. So most people will never tell you that they have a complaint. They'll just go to a different place. So be thankful that you're able to hear reviews and feedback. And then take the feedback and see, what is the nature of the feedback? Is it something that are many people saying this complaint? You know, in terms of the pediatrician's office, there were a lot of people complaining about the same thing at that pediatrician's office. So, you know, the pediatrician, rather than firing their patients, might have wanted to take a good hard look at what the feedback was and realize that the feedback is there to help them improve their service. And I think that feedback, although painful sometimes as entrepreneurs because we take our businesses very personally, it's important to really take it and think about it and see if we can make any changes. If you're getting a lot of negative reviews on Yelp or somewhere else, like that's not a social media issue. That's a business problem. And those same people, if they were calling you and complaining, you know, you wouldn't blame the telephone,
right?
Yeah. So social media is just a tool that they're using to share the reviews. And so I think that the nice thing about the tweets being on social media is that when you react to them, it's in public. So when you make that angry customer or upset or disappointed customer happy, everybody sees that you did that. And we've seen tons of companies that come out the other side of a negative review looking better than they did before the mess up.
Yeah.
Because they managed things, because they replied quickly and politely, because they were able to sort things out for the customer. You know, and then there's always going to be the very angry customer that for some reason something's happened and you've tried to help them as much as you can. And then we suggest just replying in public. Always reply in public first. So reply on the platform that they complained on.
Right.
And tell them that you would like to help them and you want to work on it and ask them to then take it to email or take it to a phone call. And just to show people that you did reply.
Because
you don't want to leave it hanging there unreplied to. I think that's one of the worst things you can do.
There are a lot of great stories in this book. I'm thinking of the Domino's Pizza in Oregon that noticed one of their regular customers wasn't ordering, so they sent someone over to check up on him, and unfortunately he'd had a stroke or a heart attack or something like that and was in dire health.
Yeah, they saved his life.
Yeah.
It's an incredible story.
Yeah.
I love that story particularly because it was like frontline workers that did it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in businesses, like we kind of use the like warm body syndrome. We just hire people, you know, because
right.
that job needs to be done. But really the most important people who do branding for our company are our frontline workers. And it's so important that they be treated well and that they treat customers well. And so I love the story because this is, you know, the pizza guy who many of us would think maybe wouldn't care that much.
Yeah.
And he saved someone's life. And I love that story. Such
yeah.
a great story.
Yeah, companies need to do more in terms of I guess, empowering or emboldening their staff to make decisions, make those frontline decisions that will count. There are stories in the book where if they do that, the company's bottom line improves even, right?
Yeah, the most important branding department in your company is HR. It's hiring. It's who you bring into your company. And that goes for everybody from, you know, the frontline workers all the way to, you know, marketing and everything. It's all part of when a customer sees your company, they don't think, oh, that person's in sales or that person's in shipping. They think that's the person from company X.
Yeah.
And so it's very important, and frontline especially, because they're working with people every day. And a lot of the time, it's reflective of how they're treated. Like when you read, like for example, when we were talking about United,
uh-huh.
there's so many stories about United not treating their employees well. You know,
yeah.
And so that trickles down into how then employees are treating customers. Because they don't feel valued and they're not given any kind of autonomy to make those decisions, you know. So yeah, absolutely. The Domino story is such a great story,
yeah.
One of our favorites.
So you mentioned the travel that Scott does for keynotes, and I know that you go with him at times. Are you able to find a work life balance, the both of you?
Well, yeah. I mean, we are. We. Sort of, I do most of the writing, and Scott is the speaker, and I can't travel with him too much. I try to sometimes, but we have a blended family with 5 kids,
uh-huh.
So a lot, someone needs to make sure, you know, everyone has food and stuff,
yeah.
So most of the time I'm here, and we write together, we do the podcast together, and I try and go and see him on stage whenever I can, and when we're really lucky, every once in a while we get to do a live on podcast together, and that's probably one of our favorite things to do. But yeah, I mean, because we live together and work together, work-life balance is complicated, but I think that's our personalities as well. Like, I'm someone who, whatever I'm doing for my work is something I like to talk about and I'm passionate about, and so we're both like that, so
yeah.
I think it works for us. We'll often be, you know, in the middle of dinner, or we'll be out, or we'll be on vacation with the children, or something will happen, and all of a sudden we're having a conversation about a new book we want to write or a new project we want to do. So for us, it works really well. And it's just sort of like work and life happening all the time, maybe,
yeah.
at the same time.
Yeah. You guys get a lot of free stuff? Because I was reading the book, and it seems like you're sent things all the time.
Not as much anymore. I think people maybe are afraid that we'll say something bad. I don't know. We used to get more, I think. We used
yeah.
to get, you know, I think it's in a marketing is a story of Tassimo with the coffee, which
oh,
is
yeah.
a great free
yeah.
thing that we got. We're still, I think we're on our second Tassimo now that we've bought, and we've probably spent many, many, many fortunes buying coffee. We do get sent stuff sometimes, but not as much as we used to.
Yeah.
It was maybe a little bit more towards the beginning of Twitter when everything was kind of blowing up, and Scott was, he still is, but like a big Twitter influencer
uh-huh.
kind of a person, and so then he was getting sent a lot of things.
Yeah.
We did get the peanut butter, though, which is one of the best stories in the book, too.
Yeah.
We get sent, you know, we get sent things that Scott and I like, but not often does it impress our children.
Right,
so we,
right.
you know, we're always trying to seem cool to all these teenagers, and then one day this giant box of home plate peanut butter, which is awesome,
yeah.
came, and the kids were very impressed that we got a giant box of peanut butter. They thought that was very cool. So,
yeah, I guess that's what we all want, and I guess that's what makes sense, not only for how companies should treat customers, but how people should treat people in general, is that the personal touch, it goes a long way, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we're all people. We're all faced with the same sort of challenges, and just to be kind and decent to each other go so far
yeah.
that I, you know, it's and it's the little things we remember about, you know, about businesses. It's, you know, being kind when we need to return something, or, you know, being patient when we're frustrated about something. These are all things, we all feel frustration. We all feel that feeling. So just to be able to react to it in a human way, in an understanding kind of a way, is it goes along. Most of the time, people just want to be heard. Most of the time, people post complaints on social media because they want the company to say they're sorry.
Yeah.
You know, and that's such a small thing to do, really, in the grand scheme of things.
This is such a great book, and I appreciate the conversation today because there's so many great stories in here, and I urge people to pick this up. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was fun to talk to you.
The book is called Unbranding, 100 Branding Lessons for the Age of Disruption. It's published by Wiley. One of its authors, Allison Stratton, joined me on the line from Oakville, Ontario, in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.